assess the portfolio of options that best fits their education needs. Finally, I want to publicly thank the committee who worked tirelessly to provide the transportation for our high school students. We really appreciate the efforts of Phil Weber and Andy Leibenguth of Portland Public Schools Transportation, Nate Waschel, who was with the mayor's office and now is with Portland Schools Foundation, and Reese Lord of the mayor's office, who worked intensively on our students' behalf to achieve this fantastic outcome. TriMet leadership, Carolyn Young and Tom Strader, also clearly valued, as you heard, the need to ensure that our students benefit from this program. And I'd also like to thank you, especially Mayor Adams, and to our City Council for your continued efforts to support the youth of Portland. It is our hope that this opportunity continues for the years to come and expands to all students in the City of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
I'd like to call a couple of members of the Multnomah Youth Commission forward to give that perspective, and then followed with brief comments from Andrew Mason at Open Meadow. So we'll hear from Sean Hadley and Lewis Wheatley. Andrew, if you can come up too.
Well, welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. All you have to do is give us your first and last name and maybe tell us which school you're from, and we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Would you like to go first?
My name is Sean Hadley. I go to Leadership and Entrepreneurship Public Charter High School, and I am the youth liaison, one of two, for the NYC.
Glad you're here.
And my name is Lewis Sweetley. I am a senior at Lincoln High School, and I am new on the Multnomah Youth Commission this year. I'm very excited.
And you seem kind of old for high school
students. Oh, no. No, it keeps me young. Andrew Mason, Executive Director, Open Meadow.
Okay. What would you like us to know about this?
I'd first like to thank you for your involvement with the NYC, the Multnomah Youth Commission, what it's been doing, and especially this Youth Pass program in the past. So far, our school, Leadership and Entrepreneurship Public Charter High School, has 250 students, and most of them are below the poverty line. So getting finances for this school can be hard at times, and it's also important for the people to get to school. Transportation costs for cars, for gas, that's really expensive after a while. Biking doesn't really work with our current system. So when they need to get to school, they just take the TriMet, and it works most of the time. But for instance, our school was unable to do this. The 19 and 20 bus were booted 6 blocks away to Sandy Boulevard, and our school's on Burnside. And just the amount, that little bit of walking was enough to convince about a fifth of the students in my classes to not go to school. So we lost that many just from laziness. How much are we going to lose for finances? And how much are we going to gain for giving them that ability for transportation for free? I mean, all these students that are just saying, we don't want to be involved in this, could get all that transportation and be at school regularly, daily. We could increase the population in our schools by tenfold. Like I said, I'd like to thank you for what you've been doing so far.
Thank you very much.
And the original purpose of BETCE, the Business and Energy Tax Credit, was to achieve environmental sustainability in Portland. And that's the Youth Pass program is definitely going to help achieve that goal. This Monday, I helped out at Lincoln High School's registration for seniors. And many of these seniors do drive to school. However, some of the problems that our upperclassmen face are no access to public transportation because much of the district is not serviced by TriMet, and also parking is very expensive in the Lincoln area, and as well as the typical costs of driving, such as insurance and gas money. So by installing the Youth Pass, a lot of upperclassmen, as far as what I've heard from my peers, are that they are very responsive and that they would like to start using public transportation because, after all, it's hard to reject something that's free. So a lot of other students are going to be start using public transportation even if they've never used it before, and we are creating a new generation of public transit users, as well as getting a lot more cars off the road. So it makes economic sense. It helps us go green. And finally, I would like to share with you some of the materials we've been passing out at registration, which is some Respect the Ride TriMet bookmarks, and also the school IDs, which would have a public transit pass sticker on every single one for all students.
Oh, can we see those? You can give them to Carla.
May I just comment?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just have a comment because I want you, the Youth Commission, and the students to inform the rest of the students that it's not free. It's tax subsidized. And the reason that we're subsidizing it is so that you get a good education and so you can come back and pay lots of taxes. So make sure that you make sure that you use it wisely.
You're getting there, Commissioner Fritz. Now you're getting there, yeah.
Taxes provide services, and we're very happy to provide this service.
Right. Mr. Mason.
Okay, and to that end, I guess I would like to first of all, resist my impulse to gush, and that's going to take a lot of work not to gush. My hope here is to provide a little bit of the on-the-ground program impact, and I appreciate the courage, the gamble that you all are undertaking in terms of moving forward with respect to what this means for the city in terms of financing and finding someone to support the tax credit. So on the ground, Jenny Villana described 3,500 students in the alternative programs of 14,000 in our city. That's a significant chunk. At Open Meadow, 80% of the students who attend are students in poverty. So what does that mean in order to pay for transportation to come? We are able to scrap together bus passes to support 5% of our students in order to be able to attend. We scrap through a variety of means to be able to make that happen. So there's another 75% of the students in poverty that we are not able to reach until this measure. So the impact is profound. What does that mean? Portland Public already reaches out to the alternative providers and allows us to have students participate in after-school programs on site at students' home schools. They can participate in football and baseball and other things like that, but they have to be able to get there. That now will be possible for the other 75%. So students can come to school, but they're also able to participate in enrichment activities, which students who felt like they've been pushed out by the system, and yet Portland Public is willing to reach back and help them, they now have the logistical ability to make it. That matters a lot. For our organization, it's a line item of $46,000 that we now get to use to provide directly for student materials and other things too. And that's, we're a fraction of the some 16-odd providers that are partnering with Portland Public Schools. So, you can multiply what that effect looks like across the board and what we're able to do with that money. Instead of just being able to get students to school, we're now able to do enrichment internally as well during the academic day. So I thank you. It has a very substantial material impact. It has an enrichment impact on our students, and it really sends a strong message to students who have felt pushed out that they belong, that they are first-class citizens, and they really deserve the options that are available to everybody else. So I really thank you for your support on this.
Well said, all of you. Really great testimony. Thank you very much. Carla, has anyone signed up?
We have one person, Ronald Peterson.
Mr. Peterson. Welcome back to the City Council.
Thank you very much, Mayor Adams.
I am apologizing because I didn't miss it. I missed part of it. But given the current scenario with TriMet and the contract that they signed for their gasoline or their diesel allotments when the gas was really high, in this proposal, in order to help the students make it back and forth to school with a free pass, I have to give you just wonderful accolades. This is a beautiful plan. I have sent an email off to Governor Kulongoski requesting that he helps with some of the funding for TriMet after they started doing the TriMet cuts. I remember when they were trying to take off the 7-7 on the Fairless Square, and I made some recommendations at that point. And I believe Mr. Banta received a copy of what I was proposing for a survey they could do. If you want, I could send that to Amanda and have her forward it to you, since I have her address here at City Council. It's just wonderful. I have actually a son that's in high school, and he needs that. From my financial position, this is like a dream come true. This is excellent. How can anybody turn this down?
Well, thank you, Mr. Peterson.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it very much. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank our Multnomah Youth Commission for, I think, originating this idea. So great job. For Mayor Adams for bringing it forward to us with the school district on a pilot basis. And I think this is great that we're going to bring it to all PPS high schools, but we need to take in mind the other school districts, too, as our next phase to make sure that every high school student can get to school or after-school activities or to the libraries without undue cost to them or to their families. So this is a great idea, and it's really an ingenious way to take use of something that's the business energy tax credit designed to promote sustainable and green technologies. I think this fits the category. Thanks, Mayor Adams. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, we need to be very clear why this is in front of us today. It is in front of us today because of the dogged pursuit of Sam Adams that this happened. And I was in meetings just tangentially listening to his discussions with others who were pushing back on him very hard. And in spite of his congenial, relaxed appearing nature here at council, when Sam gets something on his mind, it's just easier to just say yes than it is to try to figure out why you can't do it. And one of the things I appreciate about Sam is, and a lot of people don't realize, is his experiences in growing up were almost exactly like mine. And without getting into a lot of detail, they led to both of us at the age of 16 moving out of our homes and renting apartments and getting jobs and finishing high school because we felt it was safer to do that than it was to stay where we were. Now, there is this one obvious difference Sam and I have at this point in our life that I might as well just disclose. Somehow he's managed to keep all of his hair, and yes. I have not.
Try not to be bitter about it.
And I have a little bitterness. It is the one thing that divides us from being closer as friends. But in spite of that, and it's a very hurtful difference, too, I want to point out. Every time I look at him, I get a little more resentful. In spite of that difference, I think publicly, Sam, you should be acknowledged for being a person who has driven yourself in public life. And I've known you, I've sat next to you or been close to you in one way or the other in your entire public life. And you are driven by the personal experiences you had throughout your life to make sure others don't suffer the way you did. And this is an example of that, and people should know that. Aye.
Fritz?
I was a parent in Portland Public Schools for 17 years, and all that time it troubled me that kids had to pay to get to high school, one way or another, unless they happened to be fortunate enough to live close enough to walk. Either parents drive, they drive, or they take TriMet. And I'm delighted with this program. I want to pay homage to the Sisters in Action for Power, who, even before the Multnomah Youth Commission, started the conversation of why should students have to pay to get to Portland high schools. Despite my enthusiasm for this, I still had my staff look into all of the details to find out whether, in fact, this is a good deal for the taxpayers of Portland. And it is, because it's using energy credits that we've always been able to sell.
I was like, "Ooh, man, this." Glad you didn't have too much of pause there.
So it is. It's $2.55 million, which part of the details say that the city might be on the hook for. But I'm confident that we are not going to be on the hook for it. That it's an ingenious way to pay for this program, which is an investment in our students. And I questioned why would we not do a means test? Why would we not save a little money by allowing more affluent families to opt out, which you can still opt out. But then I thought that every child deserves a quality, free public education in Portland Public Schools, and you shouldn't have to pay, no matter if you're able to pay or not. You should be able to get to school without paying. And I noticed, again, the headline today was about how Oregon SAT scores have fallen. Well, if you read the article, it says that we're still fourth best in the nation, and that Portland Public Schools had something like a 20-point rise in the SAT scores. So we should know, Portlanders should know, that our public schools are still amongst the finest in the nation with all of the cuts that have happened since Measure 5, and that we are proud to support our students. I do also want to mention that my oldest son, who's 23 and just graduated from Lewis and Clark, teaching program. My kids have become a little more involved in city government since I got a little more involved in city government, but I don't think that they go directly to the city council agenda on Friday afternoons to check what's coming up. But yesterday he came home and said, "Mom, there's this great new program that they're going to give passes to kids to get to public schools, and that means that the step-up program, which he's going to be tutoring in at Marshall High School, $20,000 more money to put into student programs." The step-up program is a function of Open Meadows, and it provides qualified teachers to tutor kids after school in groups of five for freshman students so that they get that start in high school to help them succeed so that they continue to graduate. And so just at that one program at Marshall, $20,000 more to put into student services. So it's another example of how Sam Adams, as mayor, is an education mayor who cares about education, who thinks about how to make the dollars stretch further in innovative ways like this. And I'm extremely excited about it. I also appreciate the collaboration both with Portland Public Schools and TriMet. And the partnership with the Youth Commission in helping kids understand that, yeah, you need to behave on the bus and maybe stand up for little old ladies like me who find it more difficult.
What does that, if you're a little old lady, what does that make me, 7 years your senior?
Use that bald head, Commissioner. Get yourself a seat. I found the glare works pretty well. I can teach you the glare.
Wow. She got you there, Randy.
Again.
So I'm hoping that in future years we can expand this, because even though the East Portland school districts are still providing yellow bus service, we want to help those districts as well. And we want to help students in every corner of our city succeed, as we know you can with the right support. Aye.
Fish.
So before we got started today, I had a chance to introduce Emma Brown to all my colleagues. Emma, would you just stand for a second? Emma is a rising junior at Cleveland. She's a very good student. She's studying Spanish and Mandarin Chinese, I believe. She, in her free time, she does dragon boating, and she's an ice skater, which means she's up very early to skate at the Lloyd skating rink. And she's a wonderful young woman. I was visiting her the other day at her home, and her parents were saying how independent she is and how she rides the bus everywhere. So she's a rising junior at Cleveland, and Emma is an example of someone who will benefit from this program. And why does that matter? Well, because I have two kids going to public school this fall. One is packing up her laptop and will be a rising junior. The other one's packing up his crayons and will be entering kindergarten. And
don't be sure he won't have a computer.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. And I've been struck by some correspondence I've gotten from my daughter's school, Portland Public School High School. And an email we got the other day saying that because she's active in sports, the fees are as follows. And for soccer, it's $250. But if she does more than once a sport, the fee structure goes up to $750. And that's on top of all the costs that we incur for making sure she has the clothing, the books and supplies, and the other things. And I'll tell you something else that's interesting. My daughter is 16, and she recently got her driver's license, which is why I've been a nervous wreck for the last few months. And not because of her driving, because she's on the road with other people who I have great confidence. I have great confidence in her driving. And I can tell you that I won't say that she's a backseat driver, but I do get lectured regularly when I'm driving now. But for parents who've gone through this, the rude awakening of having her get her license was learning from our insurance company that it would cost $2,000 to put her on the insurance. And that's really, and that's unless you go through driver's ed and do some other things and bring that cost down. So if you start thinking about working class families, even middle class families, and you start adding it up, there's the cost structure of sending your kid even to Portland, even to public school, can be quite prohibitive for families. So that's what I love about this, and the fact that it will encourage people like my daughter to take the bus more regularly and to have that opportunity. So Mayor, thank you for your leadership on this. You really were the difference maker. Thanks to the Multnomah Youth Commission and my former commissioner, Chantel Monk, who I know worked on this tirelessly. And I think this is really a model program, and I look forward to working with my colleagues to extend it
to the other school districts within Portland. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank my colleagues on the City Council for their kind words for my efforts on this, but this is an education City Council. This is a City Council, whether it's the work through the financial support for the Youth Commission, the internships, the investments we've made in Youth Corps, ninth grade counts. This is a City Council. This is a group effort here at city government to do everything that we can within our mission to make sure that our youth are academically successful in our public schools. But it's also, again, a partnership with our school districts. Really appreciate the operations team and the Portland Public School team for the innovation, the cash that you brought to the table for this effort, $800,000. I want to thank Carolyn Young, Fred, the board, and everyone at TriMet again for their willingness to be creative on this effort. The Youth Commission, just a fantastic organization that continues to advise us in ways to make this city a better city for all Portlanders, and especially youth. And then lastly, although I get to sit up here, there's a whole sort of village of really smart people behind me in my office and elsewhere, and I want to acknowledge my great education team. You've met Reese Lord, who was the point person on this one, but also Jane Ames, Todd Diskin, and Khalid Ladd for their great work on education. Really, really appreciate it. Aye. Approved. We will now go to time certain council calendar item 1210. If you could please read the title.
Accept report from the Citizen Noise Advisory Committee.
Hi. Welcome back. Glad you're here.
That's a good thing, right?
It is a good thing. I will be unfortunately stepping out early, but as soon as
we'll be quick.
Commissioner Frisch. Fritz will, as president of the council, be taking over in my absence. And so I just wanted to tell you up front before I left, I know how hard a work this is. I know how contentious it is. I know how thankless it can feel. But I want you to know how much I appreciate, having been the liaison to this effort for some time, how much I appreciate you sticking with it. And having those difficult conversations and trying to facilitate progress, continuous progress. I want you to know how much I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Who would you like to begin?
Sure, I'll go ahead and get started. I'm Mary Helen Kincaid. I'm the chairperson of the Citizen Noise Advisory Council. I reside in East Columbia neighborhood. And while we're passing thank yous around, I want to thank the mayor and the commissioners for taking the time to listen to us today. This is a first-time event, and we kind of fit into the scheme of things that we've heard today about building partnerships, doing things that have never happened before. CNAC's been around since it had a predecessor that started in about 1984, 85, and CNAC was formed in 1998, and we've never come before you. And two of my goals as being the chairperson were, one, to hold true on our jurisdictional reports, be it Multnomah County, City of Vancouver, Clackamas County, Washington County, and the Portland City Council. So we've done that this year, and that's why we want to come here, so that you know what we do, so that we have that open relationship. And we're solving problems. We're going out to communities. And what we're going to do today, I first would like to introduce a couple of key people. Kelly Sweeney is a CNAC member. Beverly Brunder was going to be here today, but unfortunately couldn't and notified us. We'll see her name on a slide. And Koto Kishida is another CNAC member, but she's home preparing for a trip to Japan, leaving very early tomorrow morning. So those are your four Portland City of Portland representatives. We also partner with the Port of Portland, and we've built a very good collaborative relationship with them over the last couple of years. Probably relationship was good, was distant, those sorts of things. Several Port of Portland people are in the audience that I'd like to recognize. Chris Corridge, who is the manager of long-range planning. Lise Glancy, who is the government relations manager who sets these things all up for us. And Jason Schwartz, who is the noise department manager, who has been instrumental in helping us get involved in the community and bringing the port and our community involvement together. What we're going to do today is just show you a brief snippet of what we take to neighborhoods. One of the things that one of CNAC's missions was to educate and provide outreach to citizens, and we didn't do it. We weren't doing a very good job of it. So we appointed an outreach education committee. Kelly chairs that, and we started going out to neighborhoods, and you'll see some pretty fantastic numbers of people we visited, neighborhoods we've gone to just in a year's time. You all know that we started communicating with you. You probably didn't even know. I would bet that some people didn't know what CNAC was a year ago, 2 years ago. I think it's pretty fair to say that you know who we are and how to find us now. I think that's true of our state elected officials, our U.S. state representatives. They know who we are. We've made that contact, and that didn't happen before, and I think it's a very good thing because it opens a dialogue and it helps us solve problems for citizens. So Kelly's going to go through and do a condensed version of what you see, what we do in neighborhoods. We got a couple special slides for all of you, and if there's any questions, we'll be glad to entertain them. So I'm going to turn it over to Kelly.
Okay, the first slide that I would like you guys to look at, again, my name is Kelly Sweeney, and commissioners, thanks for allowing us to come in and talk this morning. This is a snippet of what I hear just about every week when I go to neighborhood association meetings. One of the great ones is, what is a CNAC? Everybody thinks it's the duck on the commercial. So this is, you know, why do the airplanes fly over our houses? I've noticed an increase. What are the F-15s doing to me today? And so our goal and our mission is to answer many of these questions and concerns. The committee, as Mary Helen explained, is officially formed in 98. We're here to help the Port of Portland. We're here, and frankly, at times to be a side for the Port of Portland because we're the citizens' representatives. So we're here to ask the tough questions and address the impacts for neighborhoods and the impacts that aircraft flying over all our houses seem to impact us at one time or another. The education and raise the community's understanding of the aircraft has been my personal mission since about the middle of March. I've been to almost 33 neighborhoods since then, and we'll get into the numbers here in just a second. But that's why the committee exists. Our goal and our charge, it is a public meeting where we invite all of you to come the second Thursday of every month. Next month, I believe it's the 11th of September. 10th of September, thank you. Mm-hmm. Published meeting minutes, as in any most public entities. Review reports, and a lot of data. I can't impress upon enough the amount of work that Jason Schwartz and his noise committee or his noise management group at PDX do in terms of supplying information for us, and I've got an example of that here in a couple of slides. One of our main re-enhancements is getting back out to the community, and I've personally taken that on. We'll also get to those numbers, but that's basically what we're here to do. And again, we're all appointed from jurisdictions and neighborhoods around the city. So who makes up the group? As you can see from the city of Portland, the Tri-County area, our friends in Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and we certainly don't forget about our friends across the river. They are impacted by the number of airplanes as well as anybody on this side of the Columbia. And then there are four at-large nominees from the port itself. So it not only handles the jurisdictions for the Portland metropolitan and Vancouver, the port also brings in four representatives. Some of those names may be familiar to you guys. This is what I do, and this is why Mary Helen's gets all the tough phone calls. Anybody on the council ever had an airplane fly over their house? This is just a snippet. Would you guess that just, as it says, this is departures for 1 month, non-jet aircraft. This is just the smaller cargo guys, either multi-engine or single engine, who would have guessed that there's 683 of those that fly over your house once a month. And, you know, the number of complaints compared to the number of aircraft is really small in comparison, but there are a large number of airplanes flying over the house. So these are departures out of PDX. The red arrow, we have a neighbor that lives just north of Powell Butte said, I think there's an increased number of airplanes flying over my house. Well, by George, there's airplanes flying over his house. So this is just a snippet of the types of data that the port can pull down to the city block or down, you know, in a Google Maps environment, down to your household. There are also some fabulous tools that I'll get to in just a second that the port provides that you and I, as we're sitting in council meetings with our PC sitting in front of us, you could go peruse those if you chose to, put in a time and date, and you can see which airplanes flew over your house at any particular time. So there's a lot of data It's part of the customer service attitude that I believe the ports brings to the complaint and information flow that customers and the community are trying to ask for. Some of the things that we've been doing, we've visited about 25 neighborhoods in Portland, approaching almost 650 residents. Six in Vancouver, a seventh will be tonight as I head over there this afternoon, 250 people. We started with the most noisy places first, which makes sense. Let's go to where the most complaints are coming from, and we'll address those people first and try and find out what's going on and see if we can make some adjustments. Then neighborhoods that you don't think, outer southeast, the ridge along West Portland all of a sudden is lighting up because of the traffic pattern change from the North Runway being closed. It changes where airplanes fly a little bit. The noise number of communications to the port has been increasing, so I will head to the Council Crest, and I'll head to Northwest Portland in the next couple of weeks and start to listen to those people and see what their issues are. We educate the North. I'm sure you're all familiar, and hopefully you received a card from the Port of Portland that the North Runway was going to be closed, or you saw an ad in Oregonian in the Tribune that I noticed that the runway was going to close, causing different noise patterns for residents. The cargo carriers, the little small guys that feed FedEx and UPS and the other cargo companies are always flying around and cause a lot of calls into the port. And our favorite, the military schedules. 1 o'clock just about every day and 9 a.m. just about every day. You can anticipate the F-15s departing the Portland Airport. One of the things that the port does real well is in terms of helping us do the community outreach is noise, what we call noise 101. It's just general education on what aircraft noise is, and I have a couple examples of those here in just a second. And then who to call. We have many customers that gentleman a couple slides back with the red arrow, didn't want to talk to the port, didn't trust him. He wanted to talk to the citizens' side of the fence, and that's where we got involved. And so gives another option for citizens to get a hold of those that have some interest in and how to alleviate or at least understand what's going on with the noise from the Portland Airport. Just an example here from three of the neighborhoods that are real closely impacted and close in proximity to the airport from Concordia. You can read the statements. Cully, Hayden Island, and Vernon. We try to get a negative environment to a medium or at least a neutral environment. I don't think we're ever going to get positive because it's noisy and the airport's always going to impact people, but it just gives you an idea of the types of things that we're hearing when we go to the neighborhoods. The next slide is my rough attempt after my 30 years at Intel. I either can't go anywhere without a spreadsheet or I can't go anywhere without PowerPoint, and this is my spreadsheet, and I'm the retentive person in terms I've used colors to tell myself the green means we've been there, red means we need to get there and it's hot or there's a timely date coming up, but I keep a spreadsheet on when the meetings are held. This is shared with everybody on CNAC and the Port of Portland so they can see when the neighborhood meetings are held. You know, jump into the water, it's warm, come on in and help us talk to the community. So the spreadsheet is a tool that we use to keep updated and know how much impact that we've made in the neighborhoods. The next slide is the current list of neighborhoods that we hit from both Portland, Vancouver, and Gresham, as well as some of the boards that we've also been to that we were able to meet Commissioner Fritz at a couple of months ago as an example. To give you an idea of what happens at the airport, on the average of almost 680 flights a day, you can see the numbers in terms of commercials, the vastly outnumbers the rest of the activity. Cargo, mostly, you know, before 8 a.m. and after 5 p.m., and then the military flights, as we talked about, fly Monday through Friday for the most part, 9 a.m. and 1 a.m., and they do have a monthly weekend where they keep the weekend warrior guys busy, and then they have to be trained, and the Pentagon scrambles them at a moment's notice just to keep the alert guys on their toes. To give you an idea in terms of sound levels, and it's always measured in decibels, the 737-700 is the most prominent commercial airplane that comes and goes out of Portland, mostly Southwest and what Alaska flies. The small regional jet, the CR-700 as it's known, is the Horizon airplane, and also United and SkyWest fly those. The Q-400 is the little turboprop that are not little, the 72-person turboprop that Horizon flies. And then there's a new service with a single-engine turboprop that flies between Seattle, Astoria, Newport, and Pendleton. And it gives you a relative idea. The smaller the airplane, normally the less noise that it will produce. And then it gives you an idea what a city bus and our favorite friends from Esther Short Park over in Vancouver, they get the train, they get the bridge, they get the construction, and so we always throw the train whistle in because they are usually the top of the list in terms of sound. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner, I thought you had a question. The Noise Management Office, this is our liaison into the port. Step back when Mary Helen was trying to reinvigorate the approach to get out to the neighborhoods, and they stood back and said, knock yourself out, go have fun with the neighborhoods. And so we've been very grateful for their support in terms of helping us get to the community outreach. The dedication in terms of making the port good neighbors starts from the very top, from the port, through Jason's office that we deal with daily. And I can't tell you again, the supply of noise data, their willingness to go to a person's house, take noise monitoring equipment to any individual's house to show them, to measure, is their perception and the reality of what's flying over the houses in reality. So the effort that they're willing to go to in terms of customer service, I believe today is unprecedented. At least the reading I do from other noise environments around the United States and Canada in terms of what airports are willing to do for citizens. So I think they're actually a role model. And Jason has been quoted in several industry publications in terms of trying to do more outreach, and hopefully we're a parlay for that, for him to help that. And then the tools, it's just all the data that we're able to receive. This is the example of what I talked earlier when I always talk to citizens. Those of us that get to sit on conference calls many hours of the day get distracted, and this is a perfect distraction tool. Go onto the PDX website, and you can pull up WebTrack, and you can play with all sorts of interesting graphical environments to see what airplanes are flying where. You can see the two airplanes approaching. One's a jet, one's a smaller cargo airplane approaching. And it's just by time, gives you the current weather. You can put the date in, back, forward. And it's just the only difference is it's a two-hour delay in terms of when the date stamp that you're trying to find.
I'm going
to
interrupt Kelly here because he often inserts here, if you're on a really boring conference call or in a boring meeting, you can pull this up and watch the planes fly over your house. So you might see who flew over and woke you up at 6 in the morning.
Not that I'd ever do that, and I hope my boss isn't watching.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot we're on TV.
The scale that's always used in terms of to give people, because decibel readings is logarithmic, and so it's not a one-for-one scale. But to give you an idea, where the 66 decibel level is, this is about what 66 dB is, normal speech patterns between back and forth between two people, but we're not amplified. But, hey, who's kidding who? Jets make noise. And they're right at the top of the scale, and it just depends on when you're measuring it, how high they are, what the ambient air temperature is. There's a lot of technical variables, and that's why we have people like Jason and Chris Corridge from the port who are the experts here. But this gives you just an idea of, the one thing I wish were on here, as my two children have, is what their iPods do to their ears in terms of what's the decibel level. When I ride my bike out of Marine Drive and I can hear the person next to me, I can hear their iPod, and I don't have one on, I know that it's got to be loud. But this is a relative scale to give people an understanding of what they're hearing and to give them an idea of how loud it is. This is one of the last slides we give when we're talking to neighborhoods, who to get a hold of. And my name is usually on here below Jason's. I'm very free to give my email address, my telephone number. I want people to contact me if they have a problem, and that's part of the new renewed effort that CNAC is working for here. If there are so many tools, there's the both call in, 800 number, so in the region it's free. Web is the tool of choice these days, so they can email, they can have email alerts sent to you. I mean, there's more information than many people may want, but I think between the Noise Management Department and CNAC, we're working hard to at least make the environment open for citizens to be able to understand what's going on. May not always solve their problem, may not make them always happy, but at least they have tools to communicate, and that's one of the key things that we're trying to reinitiate here. Mary Helen.
And just to recap some of the accomplishments, these are contained in a report that was handed out to you. We didn't go through it line item because I knew that you could read the jurisdictional or have your staff read that report. But we've established contacts with elected officials, I mentioned that, and neighborhood groups that never existed. And I'm very, very proud of that because I think that's going to help people. I've experienced in my own neighborhood where you go out and explain to people and educate them about the airport and noise. It helps them. It might not give them the answers that they want, but the education is there, and they can at least understand a situation. Kelly's 98% of our public presentations, but we've had other CNEC members attend other Concordia, Park Rose, those neighborhoods. So 31 neighborhoods in two states and almost 900. Kelly set a goal for 1,000. I think we'll be there easily. We've advised the port on noise-related issues at the North Runway Extension. A lot of construction issues, but one of the things that we're concerned just in my neighborhood is construction vehicles backed and up and the trucks that they make that beep, beep, beep sound. The port said, well, we'll look at that. And their construction manager went in and devised a whole system so that they drive in a circular fashion so there is no backing up. So Columbia Edgewater golfers weren't hearing the beep, beep of the construction vehicles, and my neighborhood wasn't hearing that. We participate. The Port of Portland invites us to go with them to all the open houses that they do. So de-icing is not really noise, but one of the primary factors that people contact the port about is noise. And so we're there wherever the port goes so that they have access and can ask us questions. And the other thing that's been a big current issue for us is ongoing review of the continuous descent overhead approach with the Oregon National Guard. Extensive research. We spent 15 months. We've done 3 different noise measurements, and we've gone out to neighborhoods and spoken to them. I believe brought all of you up to speed either in writing or emails, and I think we have a lot of information to make an informed decision on that. And our meeting to come to an advisory to the port is September 10th. One other thing I wanted to mention, and Kelly touched on it, the Vancouver Air Authority, Jason might have to help me on this, but they came up with the best practices of noise management and community solutions, a report funded with some federal money in Wiley Labs. And one of the things that was most noticeable is that Portland's meeting 95% of those best practices. So we do have a really supportive noise program. And in closing, we wanted to ask you something. The City of Portland does not currently have a process to nominate a nominee to CNAC. It's the only jurisdiction that doesn't. There was great confusion over the last 2 City of Portland nominees. Part of it was because of change in council members. Part of it was there's no precedent. The other part was there was conventional wisdom and institutional knowledge that went away or got spoken. So I'd encourage you and ask you, and I'm willing to work with anybody and however it is that you decide those things, that we come up with a process so that it's not contentious, so we're not pitting neighborhood against neighborhood, coalition against coalition, you know, who's my representative, those kinds of things. We want to be City of Portland representatives so that we can respond to citizens, so that you know that the process is complete and that we know how that's handled. And it also makes it easier on the port who coordinates those things.
Madam President. So I'd like to ask you, either Jason or Mary Helen, specifically about the descent overhead approach by the Oregon National Guard. And for those that are listening, essentially that is a maneuver by the Oregon Air National Guard, which is either F-15s or F-16s.
They're F-15s, and I'm just going to clarify.
Can I ask my question first?
Sure.
I'm a stickler about being able to ask my question before people respond, so excuse me. It is a huge issue right now, and essentially for those that are listening by way of TV that may not understand what that is the Air National Guard practices a maneuver whereby they, in approaching the runway, actually stall the plane as much as it will stall and stay flying and then accelerate rapidly and go in and land. And apparently, it's a maneuver that they need to practice for a variety of reasons, none of which I disagree with. The issue that the neighborhood has and that I have, and I think you'll hear from Commissioner Fish at least real soon, is why does it have to be over the Coley neighborhood? Why can't it be out over the Pacific Ocean or Eastern Oregon? And if that sounds unreasonable, remember these are F-15s and it takes them minutes to get to those locations. And I'm in charge of the Bureau of Development Services, which has the noise office in it. I've asked the noise officer of the city, Paul Van Orden, to attend a number of these events and measure the noise level, and it is unacceptable. And it would simply be a decision by the governor of the state of Oregon to direct the Oregon Air National Guard, which is under his command, to do those maneuvers at different places, which we as a council have requested of the governor and General Caldwell, to which we have received not a satisfactory response.
Commissioner,
I'm sorry.
To the last letter that we authored as a group, we've received no response.
that's not satisfying. Commissioner Fish is always more direct than I am. I am the more polite of the two of us, so I just wanted to characterize it as not satisfactory. So I guess what I'm saying is I appreciate the work you do. I appreciate more than you know the balancing act that you have. And I appreciate the challenges, especially with LEAST here and the interactions with the FAA and the limitations that I don't think even the citizens understand you have in influencing what the FAA decides to do or not to do. Because ultimately, LEAST Glancy or Bill Wyatt could, or the governor, for instance, could call the FAA and say, we really would like you to use a different approach on these planes, commercial planes that you're bringing in because you're disturbing our neighbors. And they could say, thanks for the information, talk to you later, and hang up. But this is the Oregon Air National Guard, completely controlled by Oregon officials. And this is a problem that could be stopped with a phone call, the area code of which is 503. And so I'm having a hard time getting my arms around why we can't get some responsiveness around these frightening, they're frightening to people watching, to watch a plane fly and appear to stop and begin to fall and then take off again. They're also very loud. And what is it going to take for us to get that through to the governor, apparently, or the Oregon Air National Guard, hopefully, that we want those maneuvers done somewhere else?
Okay. The first clarification that I want to make, in the Oregon Air National Guard, when they present this proposal to us, is explaining the difference between a maneuver and a procedure. This is a military normal operating procedure. All military pilots are prepared in this. I did not bring or ask the Oregon Air National Guard to come to this because this particular president, and they could probably, but I can tell you from my experience of hearing this, because they could explain it better. But my understanding it, and have come to obtain the knowledge, and forgive me here, too. A maneuver, so they call it, and it's a normal operating procedure that all military pilots have to be trained upon.
And I understand that. Okay. And the neighborhood actually is sophisticated enough on the issue now, they understand that. That's not the issue.
It's, but they continue to call it a maneuver.
Okay,
and
okay.
So,
but you're I don't want to get to where we're talking about a maneuver or an operation.
I wanted to clarify some misunderstanding.
Okay, but that's irrelevant to the point. The point is there is whether they're maneuvering or operating over a neighborhood. I want to stipulate to you, we all agree they need to do what they're doing. I'm just asking, why can't we convince people that work for the state of Oregon, that are responsible to the state of Oregon, to do what we all agree is an important thing that they do, whatever you call it, out over the Pacific or over an uninhabited area of eastern Oregon? Why does it have to be over the Coley neighborhood?
Number one, it's not over the neighborhood. The flight paths, all of that information was sent to your office, to you. Mike Liefeld, from the Compliance Services Manager from BDS, was at our fly day. He was going to comply. I'm not going to...
You're correct. Once again, you're missing my bigger point. The noise levels... But the noise levels over the neighborhood we measure. And the noise levels in the neighborhood we measure. And you're correct. They're not...
There were 73 DBA for less than 20 seconds, which is less than a city bus going by on a street.
Well, they violate our city noise standards.
Not for a single event. Paul Van Orden, I discussed this with Paul Van Orden. He was at our August 13th meeting, and the city noise code is based on DNL. And again, this is going to get into a day and night level. You take a number of events, divided by the time of day, how many times it happens, and then it's an average. And that's how the city code is written. And that's a very layman's, simple explanation. The noise. So this was not a 70 DNL event, which is what's comparing apples to oranges. You can't compare a 70 dBA single event, which they call LMAX. The longest maximum time was 20 seconds, and the highest amount it was. I didn't bring those exact statistics. Jason might have them on the tip of his tongue, but was 73 decibels. The planes currently fly in, the current flight in, straight in approach over East Portland, over Wilkes. They come in at, is it 76? At 76 decibels, recorded at exactly about the same distance, which is, in as Kelly stated, It's not arithmetic, it's logarithms, so it's basically twice as loud. So in the big picture of things, it's actually reducing noise in the metro region. Now, the flight tracks show that the flights came, two of the three flights were approximately 200 feet south of Columbia Boulevard, so the predominant flight track for the Flight A was over airport property, and it was at 1,500 or 2,000 feet. There are cargo haulers that fly in over that same neighborhood, over residential areas, between 5 and 700 feet at about 80 decibels. But again, in my mind, that's comparing apples to oranges.
Because
you're comparing a cargo hauler to a military aircraft. Noise-wise, you can do the comparison in decibels and events. And the length of the vent of a cargo hauler flying over from about 20th and Alberta to the airport is a much longer event and much more noise. I think that...
this is very helpful. Can I jump in at 1 second? Just, I don't want to follow the thread. And if you're through, I want to just follow that thread.
I wanted to just add one more thing about over the neighborhood. Technically, I will agree, it's over the neighborhood because that industrial area is in the Cully neighborhood. But I've got a zoning map out. I went over it with Paul Van Orden, and I said, you know, here are the residential areas. And when the pilots fly this, the planes, and just for my example, because I don't have all the technical expertise to say this, but the planes don't fly on a track like a train. So it'd be like you and I getting on a bicycle trying to ride in the exact same circle on a yellow line 50 times. We'd do it maybe 48 times, but two times we might veer out a foot or two. So the planes are moving just that little bit on their approach, but not a foot or two.
I would just conclude by saying we have conflicting information from the noise officer, you and I do. And we probably,
from which noise? Your Paul Van Orden?
I have one noise officer, and we probably need to sit down in my office and compare notes.
I'd be more than happy to.
Let me just finish. Because he has reached different conclusions on different events than what you're representing, and that could be a misunderstanding that I have that would be helpful for me if maybe we all sat down with him and looked at the analyses.
Because Paul was not at the flight A, but Mike Liefeld was?
Well, he's scheduled to be at one shortly. If I thought he was at one, and there's one coming up shortly that he's...
There is no more flight A.
Event he is going to observe very coming up soon.
So evidently this is a topic that needs more in detail.
I'd be glad to meet with you.
Did you have a follow-up, Commissioner Fish?
First of all, thank you for your service. Hmm. This is, as has been noted, a very challenging job to balance all the conflicting interests, so thank you for that. And I also want to talk a little bit about the Oregon Air National Guard, and we are blessed to have the Guard at the airport providing security to the region, and that's not what this discussion is about. This discussion is about complaints and concerns raised by people in Cully Concordia and other parts of Northeast about having F-15s fly over. And I will tell you that maybe it's a function for me of the post-9/11 world, or maybe it's just a function of what an F-15 represents. But I will tell you that for a lot of us, when an F-15 comes over the city, particularly to low altitude at a high speed, it raises more than sound issues for us, because an F-15 is a warship. And one of the questions that I think for people is, unlike a cargo plane, where we don't usually associate that with some attack or some security challenge, when an F-15 is flying around, I think it does stir a different kind of emotion. When you combine that with the noise in an area that already feels like they're managing a lot of noise, I think we can all understand where the concern lies. And the question that we have posed previously is very simple. We honor the Air National Guard. We're grateful that they're at the airport. We're not the experts on these maneuvers and the continuous descent overhead approach. We don't know what best practices there are throughout the nation, although it's not clear from any record I've seen as to whether there's a dense neighborhood next to a flight pattern similar to what we have here. That's nothing in the record, but maybe so, maybe not. We may have a unique situation. But the concern that the issue that's been raised is, could we look at some alternatives where pilots could safely execute this procedure that doesn't have it occur over a dense neighborhood? And I think that's a question, it's a fair question, regardless of noise, as to whether there are feasible alternatives. And in the letter that we wrote a number of months ago raising that question, we never got a response. I was a little disappointed in that. We'll follow up, of course. We're not putting ourselves, I'm not presuming to put myself in the shoes of General Reese or the experts here, but I think a lot of people want to know, is there an alternative? And if there is an alternative, is it cost-effective? Does it not put our pilots at risk? And does it accomplish the same goals that the Air National Guard is looking for? To me, those are reasonable issues to raise. We have not gotten a response. On the specific question of noise, though, I'd like to ask you, has the CNAC, the Citizens Noise Advisory Committee, have members of the CNAC visited the homes of any of the folks who've raised concerns about noise and listened to the noise from their point of view?
I was not at a citizen's home when the fly day occurred. This approach, we did a six-month test. Because of the parameters, it's only done when the wind is out of the west, when the weather is clear, when the FAA clears them. They just to answer that, because that would be a very difficult thing to be able to pinpoint a time in day that you could be at a citizen's house. But I'll get to that. But I just want to preface it by explaining why it's difficult. Basically, the planes fly 9 a.m., 1 p.m. They come back about an hour and a half later. When they're approaching Portland, they call into the air traffic control and say, can we do a CDA, continuous descent approach? FAA says yes or no at that point. We don't know what they're going to say because the FAA doesn't know ahead of time if a Southwest plane is late, if a United plane is on the runway, all of those things, because they have to manage all the traffic on the ground and in the air, and airspace is needed to do this particular approach. So they'll say yes or no at that point, and the approach is done. Currently, when you say alternative, what they do is they fly in from 10 miles out, engines, and when you fly, you've experienced this. They call it a step-down approach. You come in, they'll glide a little bit, and then they'll power engines back, and then military jets do the same thing, and they're noisier. So that's what they're doing currently. To get proficiency in this particular, and I don't mean to answer for the Oregon Air National Guard, and I think the best thing here is to maybe get staff and any of you that are interested, because they're more than willing to come and talk, the pilots that do this that have made this proposal. But currently what they do most of the time is go to Redmond, but they can't touch the ground in Redmond just because of time and proficiency and airspace. That so it's taking about 20 to 30 minutes out of their time, the fuel, all of that, for them to do it. So that is an alternative. Out over the Pacific Ocean, they wouldn't be able to get close. I'm sure air currents and water and all of that would come into play from what I understand. They do it on their return. See, they're, from what I understand, and again, I shouldn't even be answering this, but they fly out, do military maneuvers, and fly back, and then the approach is as they land. Most of what people hear that's the incredible noise that they and that's been confused with this issue is the departure. This is not about departures at all, but that's the incredible amount of noise that most people are complain about and sometimes confused with landing. This is just about landing. Okay. Two different Saturdays, I went out and walked around and knocked on doors in the Cully neighborhood. Some people talked to me, some didn't. 72nd in Alberta, Mike Denbrough's, Representative Denbrough's daughters just moved into the neighborhood. I was around 59th in Holman and around 72nd, and then at 60th in Ainsworth where the noise measurements were taken. There's three houses around there. Asked them if they had noticed any increase in noise, if there were they had any issues, had they seen the overhead approaches. One person said that they saw the planes fly over and they didn't know what they were doing, but they weren't bothered by the noise. We had our fly day at Helens View High School and talked extensively with the principal. Were the kids affected by it? Would they be, she seemed to think that they weren't bothered at all by the noise.
If I could just tell you, on that point, for what it's worth, the last time I was at the Cully Concordia Neighborhood Association mm-hmm. meeting, and they get a very robust turnout.
Yes.
Every single person in the room was concerned about this issue, and I think a helpful piece of this would be if you could help us facilitate a discussion with the Oregon Air National Guard, and not simply with the pilots, but with the commanders to talk about what you know, the people that can actually make the decision. But the last time I met with the neighborhood, everybody had a concern, and it wasn't because they are reflexively anti-military, and it's not because they understand that there's an airport next door.
Can I just ask when you were there? That's what I because there's a clarification point.
Last time I was there, it was about 3 months ago.
Okay.
So
they did have. I mean, originally there was a lot of misinformation and incorrect information that was given to residents of Cully, both in the Portland Tribune.